Get ready for a journey into the heart of Bridgeport politics with In Absentia, a new podcast from Connecticut Public's investigative team, The Accountability Project. Learn about the city's past and present political dysfunction and the systems that enable it. Tune in wherever you get your podcasts.
Funding provided by Gregory Melville and Susan Fox and Kathleen Bromage.
Today on The Nose, well, first of all, we're in our New Haven studios. Second of all, you know, last night I was watching the second Guardians of the Galaxy movie, and there's kind of a beautiful thing that happens at the end, this kind of fireworks for this dead character. And I was thinking about how sad it would have been if James Gunn had been absolutely permanently fired from that particular franchise. But a lot of that kind of thing is really happening. Gunn managed to get out of the doghouse. A lot of other things are being canceled. People are being fired. We're going to talk a little bit about that cancel culture. We've also been watching a series called The Boys. It's streaming on Amazon Prime. It's about what if superheroes were corporate jerks, and maybe even a worse word than that. Live from New Haven, from our beautiful studios in Gateway Community College, it's time to do The Nose. And let me tell you who's here in the Gateway Community College beautiful studios. Lucy Gelman, editor of the arts paper and host of WNHH Radio's Kitchen Sink. Mercy Quay, founder and principal consultant for The Narrative Project and a columnist for Hearst Connecticut Media Group. Brian Slattery is the arts editor for the New Haven Independent and a producer at WNHH Radio. So a little bit later in the show, we're going to talk about a series on Amazon Prime called The Boys. It is a comic book series made and a superhero series made by an auteur who hates superheroes and thinks they're really stupid and that they've made us stupider. And so if you have superhero fatigue, it's difficult to know how you will react to this series because it might, in fact, reflect some of your own thinking and feeling, or it could be just one more superhero series that you're already tired of. But before we get to that, we're going to talk about cancel culture. We're also going to talk about the 25 most important characters of the last 25 years in culture. So let's start with this cancel culture idea. Let me give you some I'm going to sort of paint the landscape out for you a little bit anyway. There's a movie called The Hunt that involves people hunting people. It seems to involve liberal elites hunting so-called deplorables. It had in it Hilary Swank and Betty Gilpin, who's currently one of the big stars of GLOW. And it is apparently not going to be shown. Universal has shelved it, put it on a shelf, because there was an awful lot of pushback. Most of the pushback was coming from Donald Trump and people who like Donald Trump, although it's not clear exactly what the politics of the movie might be. We'll talk about that. There's a movie called Adam. It involves somebody, as I understand it, pretending to be a trans person, although not really being a trans person. Sarah Silverman has said that she was fired from a new movie because of a 2007 blackface sketch she had done on her Comedy Central program at that time. And on and on. Well, we might as well add Melville Dewey, who's not really like a big player in modern popular culture, but he's the inventor of the Dewey Decibel System. Or maybe he claimed credit for inventing the Dewey Decibel System from a bunch of black and Jewish and female people that he was oppressing in other ways too, because that's apparently what he did. Anyway, his name is being stripped off certain things. I don't know if that really fits like with cancel culture, canceling Melville Dewey, but maybe it does. So, I mean, there's a thing, Mercy, that's happening here, right? There's a thing that's happening. And I guess part of the thing is that what used to be protest, or protest used to happen when something came out and people would hear about it or actually see it and decide they didn't like it, and then they'd protest it. But now they just sort of try to make it, they sort of try to smother it in its crib now.
Right. It turns out that what we're seeing now is sort of preemptive protests. Like you said, they're trying to disappear it before it ever hits the light of day. And I think, I mean, liberals being called snowflakes, right? is something that I always want to push back on. We're not snowflakes. In fact, it's not a safe place that we want. We want a space to be able to correct these problematic ideas. So something that I find really interesting in something like The Hunt, which to me is just a 2019 update of The Purge with the roles flipped, because if you remember The Purge, it was, right, your sort of Republican wealthy elitists hunting off poor or, you know, low income people of color. But now what's going on is, you know, if we don't want to see it, if we think that we're going to be opposed to it when it comes out, it doesn't matter what we actually know about it. We're just going to kill it before it hits the light of day. And I think that's problematic.
Mm. Brian?
Yeah. I mean, I'm one of those people who's definitely agreeing with that.
All right.
You seem to interpose a certain amount of Homeric detachment.
I know. I know. On the wine dark sea, I am against it. I think that, you know, in the current political climate, there's really it's hard to be a creator in it because it moves so fast, and it takes longer than culture is changing to make a cultural product, an idea that maybe made sense a year ago when you first started this project, suddenly is like not a very good idea now that you've finished the project.
Right. Although I have to think and The Hunt on storyboards was probably going to be a problem no matter
what. Yeah. But it's, you know, these things are moving so quickly that it's kind of hard to keep up with it. And I think that I would rather have more things to argue about than fewer things that we're somehow kind of like canceling out before they ever arrive. Like, you know, there's a part of me that really does think that the market works as a mechanism for deciding what cultural products are good and which ones aren't. And if you don't get to see those products, you don't get to decide. And I would much rather be in the position of being able to see them and deciding.
Lucy, I'm not asking leading questions so far. I'm just saying your names.
Yeah, I think we're largely going to be in agreement with each other here. The way I think about cancel culture, which I am in favor of canceling, if that makes sense, is I would really like the world to operate, and we're not under a political administration, I think, that operates like this, but I would really like the world to operate a lot more like good reporters tackle stories. And what that means is I would like to see a lot more in the pop culture mainstream and in articles coming out, because this is, I think, the idea of something being canceled that trickles down to even the way we're seeing some of our media writing stories in a much more careful way. And I think there's a fine line between political correctness, mm-hmm. which is very, very important, and saying, well, this might offend someone, so I'm not going to do it. I think do it. Make sure it's in your wheelhouse, right? Like, make sure that you've done your homework, but then put your work out there. And if people don't like it, they can protest it once it's out there.
I think to your point about political correctness, it feels as though even the culture around that really has turned into, let's not say this just for the sake of not saying it.
I think that's absolutely mm-hmm. true.
Right?
And it makes me crazy. I mean, sometimes and I think New Haven in some ways can personify cancel culture if we want to go there.
Yep.
I have been in discussions in New Haven that have been so frustrating because they haven't moved past the point of, oh, that person doesn't support Planned Parenthood, she must be a terrible person. Or, oh, that person thinks this show is okay, what a toxic white liberal. And okay, you can throw that term around, but I want to talk about why she supports the show, or why someone isn't interested in something, and really get to the root of it and have a messy I'm so hungry for messy discussions, and I get excited when I get to have them, and I don't feel like cancel culture invites that at all. I feel like it's the opposite.
But do we, I guess I mean well-intentioned white liberals, bear some of the blame for this? I mean, like, we set up a whole bunch of things so that, like, let's say that, you know, instead of Awkwafina in The Farewell, it's Taylor Swift or something, and then we're going to go nuts.
Of course we do.
And so we kind of got this ball rolling down the hill, and now it's starting to crush things.
Yeah, and I think that while I think white liberals, and I don't know if I can speak on this a little bit, but I'm going to, if white liberals...
I'm sorry to include you with white liberals. You should cancel me just for doing that.
Canceled. Walking out now. No, right. I think, so what I'm craving, Lucy, I think, you know, while I can rest a lot of the blame on, you know, at the feet of white liberals, what I'm craving is a lot more social responsibility from everyone, mm-hmm. right? Let's have these messy discussions and let's, you know, move head, like dive head, how do you say this phrase? Dive head first into the sordid conversations that would otherwise be deemed politically incorrect and come out on the other end with social responsibility. Yeah. If we don't know why we can't talk about it or why it's being canceled, then you're not really doing anything to improve the society around you.
I think that conversation involves making a lot of mistakes and taking a lot of risks.
Yes.
And if you can't, especially for, you know, art stuff, if you can't take risks, like, where are we? Mm-hmm. Like, are we just going to end up with, like, the adult version of Hello Kitty for everything?
Well,
That was one of the things that Sarah Silverman said. So,
absolutely.
Supposedly, she didn't get this role. We don't even know exactly what it was. They had cast her, then they canceled her. They cast somebody else because of, in 2007, a blackface sketch that she was doing to try, as usual, in a very transgressive way, to make some kind of point about racism. But, she said they replaced me with somebody who was really just wonderful, but who doesn't typically or who has never stuck their neck out. And what you're saying is you want people to stick their necks out.
I want everyone to stick their necks out.
I mean, I think even as creatives and as intellectuals, we know that if you're creating work inside of safe space, you're not actually creating anything that's groundbreaking.
Right.
And I think
cancel the term safe space?
Absolutely. I'm good with that. And you
know
what
else
I'm good with?
This is New Haven. You can't do stuff like that.
You know what else I'm good with canceling?
Someone's going to cancel me once I leave this.
Individuals. I'm happy you led me there. I'm happy to cancel individuals who prove to be problematic on a, I was going to say rhythm, but on a, have a pattern of problem. I'm going to stop talking now. Have a problem of problematic comments or actions, whether that is on Twitter or in person or in their work. I think it is absolutely okay to cancel those individuals.
Well, yeah. Should we, go ahead and say something.
Well, I was just going to say, I think within this, there is a need, maybe because things feel so tumultuous right now, a lot of people gravitate toward the need for resolution and for reconciliation. And as a person, I get that because resolution feels really good, especially in the moment. But it's sort of like paying your taxes is also a form of self-care, even though it doesn't feel as good as a bubble bath with Epsom salts or something like that. It is okay to walk away from a TV show or a movie or even a conversation about one of those things thinking I'm really fired up and I don't know if I've gotten to the place I want to go. Or to go protest a form of pop culture. I am all for that. As a culture reporter, it makes me really excited when someone's angry about a project that's either a grassroots project by, you know, a New Haven artist or a project that's happening on a national scale and has millions of dollars behind it.
First of all, I wanted to, somebody should invoke the Slattery rule. The Slattery rule, as I understand it.
I knew that was going to come up today.
I've forgotten all about that.
Yeah, yeah. Is that the contribution that the artist in question is making is placed on one side of the scale, and then the magnitude of the offense is placed on the other tray on the scale.
What did you name it? The Slattometer?
I don't know. I don't think we ever went there. But I think another part of this is I think we have to trust people. I'll give you an example, all right, that indicts me. So I really like and have watched 3 or 4 times and will probably watch again 1 or more times before I die, the original Red Dawn that has like Patrick Swayze in it. You know, this is the one where the Russians invade America. And it has a really good cast.
John Milius, though.
John Milius, who's a right-wing jerk, made this. And it's all about we better have access to our guns. We need lots of guns. Because what if the Russians show up and Harry Dean Stanton's there, like imprisoned in a drive-in movie, going "Avenge me!" And like, I really enjoy the Wolverines. I understand that this movie is basically a screed on behalf of a whole bunch of stuff that run very much against my own principles. But I'm also capable of enjoying this really stupid movie and then going on to live my life. I mean, I
feel that way about Conan the Barbarian, another John Milius product.
Well, it can't just be John Milius, but I think we can listen to Wagner operas and there's all kinds of things that we can do and separate things. And for some reason or other, at this moment, we don't believe that anymore.
Yeah, I guess a piece of me also feels as though there needs to be a threshold that's crossed, right?
Yes.
So Kevin Hart, without you know, a proper apology for his comments that were very anti-gay that were made in 2007, I believe, right? Without a proper apology and some actions taken on that, without a true sort of resolution to that, I feel pretty gross entertaining any of his content. And actually, I did cancel him for quite a bit. I don't know that he's been picked up by another network in my brain yet, because everywhere else he's canceled.
I like the fact that you have networks in your brain, though. I like the fact that you're sort of multi-platform.
That's how you have to compartmentalize.
Yeah, I mean, we need to move on a little, pretty quickly here. But, I mean, to my way of thinking, like, The Hunt sounds like a really terrible movie. It really sounds like it's, like, but I would like to know exactly how terrible
yeah.
it is.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great, like, I wouldn't go see it, but I'm not sorry it was made.
Right. Or I might go see it just to find out how terrible it is.
But also, let it come out and be a massive failure at the box office.
Absolutely.
And right. people and get really riled up about it. Yeah.
I think the fear is it'll be a massive success at the box office. Well, there you go. She's making a face. The people in the
well, I mean, it also feels to me like what happened at Berkeley when Milo finished his last name for me. Pronounce
it. Giannopoulos.
Yeah.
Oh.
I invited to that. Campuses.
Wow.
And
nice
and,
work.
And I appreciate that assist. invited to campuses and the students protest out of pocket. And then it strikes this conversation about whether you want to hear these ideas so that you can protest them and expose them for how problematic and stupid they actually are. Or do you want to cancel them before they reach the light of day? And for me, sometimes there are things that you can cancel out of pocket. I don't think that a piece of cinematic, you know, fiction is in that category.
You didn't actually have to look all the way over to Berkeley for that. Milo Yiannopoulos has been on this show.
Oh, right. All right. I forget.
For that reason, though, like, oh, okay. Like, I didn't really know anything about him except, like, articles that I'd read about him about how horrible he was. So I thought, well, I'd like to talk to him then.
Weren't you accused of canceling him?
Well, we were all, yes, because it was taking us a long time to get the show on the air. It was a pre-tape. And we were in Newsweek because we'd canceled Milo. We really hadn't. All right, we should probably do a little quick shift here unless anybody else has some profession that they would like to make. Or have we covered this? Okay, we're good. But it's sort of weird. We're all opposed to cancel culture, although I feel like we have participated in a lot of the thinking that led up to it. But I guess that's...
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. R. Kelly's canceled.
Well, yeah. That's easy.
We've already been that's over
a,
R. Kelly.
That's an easy one.
We've done R. Kelly.
All right. So another thing that we looked at this week was a list. It's sort of the doldrums of August, and so people start putting out lists and stuff because, like, what else can you do, really? And there are a lot of these lists out right now. But I thought this was kind of an interesting one. It was the 25 most important characters of the past 25 years. And these characters, as you will see, can come from anywhere. I will just quickly read them. I'll go from the top down. Number one was Carmela Soprano, Donald Trump from The Apprentice, Pikachu from the Pokemon franchise, Jay-Z, a character created by Jay-Z, I guess, Hermione Granger from Harry Potter, Jar Jar Binks from Star Wars, Miles Morales from the Ultimate Comics version of Spider-Man and also Into the Spider-Verse, Sarah Palin as incarnated on Saturday Night Live by Tina Fey, Willow Rosenberg from Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Hannah Horvath, the protagonist of Girls, Edward Cullen from the Twilight Saga, Olivia Pope from Scandal, Sadness from the movie Inside Out, Kumar Patel from the Harold and Kumar movies, Tracy Flick from Election, Omar Little from The Wire, Bridget Jones, obviously from Bridget Jones' Diaries, Angel Dumont-Schunard from Rent, The Rock from WWE, Thomas Jefferson from Hamilton, Sarah Koenig from Serial, Milkshake Duck from Milkshake Duck. It was a tweet. Mindy from The Mindy Project, the Babadook from The Babadook, and Thomas Cromwell from Wolf Hall. So Lucy, do you want to applaud one of those, deplore one of those?
No. As I was reading it, it's interesting because as I was reading it, one thing I thought about was the fact that Girls was not canceled. It was allowed to reach its end in a very messy way. And a lot of people called for it to be canceled, actually. And I so enjoyed talking garbage about that show with other people. So that is an example of something that was allowed to go on and that a lot of people really hated. But As I was reading the list, I actually thought it was funny because we, growing up, I was part of a household that was sort of a PBS-only household. So I had a really comprehensive understanding of like Nova and Ken Burns and no popular culture knowledge, probably until I got to like late high school or college. And then people were like, who are you? What planet did you come from?
KGB agent.
Seriously. Totally, yeah. But
your knowledge of Poldark and Brideshead Revisited did not.
I loved Hermione. I loved her. I think a lot of young women and probably many young men too loved Hermione. But yeah, reading it, certainly some people stood out to me. And I think when I was in like high school and early college, Rent was having this revival and became very beloved again. Now, I think people have rightly pointed out a lot of that. A lot of people have tried to cancel Rent. We'll just say that.
Not gonna happen.
I don't even know about this. Why do people try to cancel Rent?
So Jonathan Larson, the writer of Rent, was my understanding is he was a straight white guy who actually a lot of people believe he died of complications from HIV and AIDS, and that's not the case. A lot of people believe that his characters are very stereotypical. I still fall hard for the show. I saw it, I think, 2 or 3 years ago when it came through New Haven on tour for the 20th anniversary.
It's also playing at the Schubert in November, just said.
Okay, amazing. Mm-hmm. And people lost their minds when Angel came on stage to come back to the list. So there were certain characters on the list where I thought, oh, yeah, you know, they are iconic. I think some characters on the list, I was talking to my partner about this last night, and he said, you've never seen The Sopranos? Like, who are you? And so I don't know if maybe I'm the best barometer for this, but I think there were some hits and some misses on there.
Well, I think part of the list, and Brian had made this point too, is nobody's seen everything on this list.
You know? Yeah, that's true. I mean, no way. It's a great example of how fragmented popular culture has gotten. That's kind of like everybody's seen a little bit of it. And I feel like we're all kind of in our own little cults, you know, sometimes, you know, where there's maybe like 100,000 people see this and 50,000 people see that. But like you don't get like the 200 million people watch this one thing, you know, which used to happen. You know,
when there were three channels.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that sort of thing used to happen. And like that's all, you know, figment of the past. It's like Cold War.
Well, for example, I would make the argument, I have made the argument to people, that it's very, very difficult to understand American culture, American politics, American public life if you haven't seen the two Godfather movies. Like we just had a Fredo controversy this week.
Yeah.
You know? I mean,
those are you know, when my son gets older, I'm gonna just make him watch those.
I think this explains so much about why I have no idea what's going on in politics right now, because I haven't seen either.
The Godfather is a real tutorial. Those two movies are something.
I mean, first of all, there's just so many tropes that are embedded in our conversation these days that come from there. It would be a longer conversation to talk about whether the movie tells an accurate and compelling story about the group that it purports to do that with. But I just think, you know, there's just a way in which that movie is now priced into our language and our imagery and stuff like that, too.
Totally.
Do we need to cancel the current civics curriculum and add
I would show the Godfather
to any civics class.
Absolutely. So would I. Yeah, it's great.
I do have a couple honorable mentions that I think need to be added.
I want to hear what those are.
Deplorable Frog. I don't think that was added, and I think we should add Deplorable Frog because throughout, you guys know Deplorable Frog.
I didn't know Milkshake Duck, so there's a possibility that I won't.
Okay, so Deplorable Frog, it was another tweet, and it was completely co-opted by, you know, the self-proclaimed Deplorables on Twitter.
Oh, you mean Pepe the Frog.
There was another frog out in culture, and you guys thought I was talking about a different frog. Well,
like, we're just making sure we're talking about the same frog.
There could be a lot of frogs.
So Pepe the Frog, Deplorable Frog. I would also add Annabelle.
That's interesting.
Conjuring.
Yeah.
Okay. So this is where I'm drawing a blank, right?
Really? Wow. Okay.
Well, I haven't seen those movies, but I know who that is, and that's an argument that the character has jumped frog like out of its actual movie or whatever its container was into the conversation, the public conversation. So.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I mean, if there is any sort of supernatural character that breaks the fourth wall, Annabelle is supposed to be that character.
Mm.
Yeah, so I think that that one proliferated pretty much every
single... See, that's interesting, because I was thinking about, like, contemporary things that I would put on that list, and, like, for me, the one is Darius from Atlanta.
Darius from Atlanta.
Who has, like, that guy seems to know everything. Like,
yeah.
Like, you know, like, Darius is gonna save us. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, we all got a lot of problems, but Darius knows the solution.
We already had this conversation in the other room. I think it sort of depends on what the parameters for the list is. I think Darius is an extension of an archetype that goes back maybe to Mercutio, but certainly the person who's kind of in an altered state, who sees reality differently, who's in touch with the fairies or in touch with an alternative universe, who brings a different kind of wisdom, often a kind of comic, addled wisdom to things, you know. And it's Zonker Harris from Doonesbury, and it's Jim Ignatowski on Taxi, and I'm dating myself right now. But
the nuance is that the folks around him seldom believe him or take him at face value.
No, yeah. I think that this is an important spice in an ensemble, you know, that you need this particular voice
absolutely.
And Darius clearly is to the ensemble on Atlanta. He's essential, you know, even though he's saying a lot of weird stuff that doesn't map well onto what everybody else is doing and thinking. That's what that character always does.
Oh,
right?
Absolutely. And just to name a couple that were just already on the list and co-sign those, Willow Rosenberg.
I was totally on Rosenbuehl. Team Willow.
Yeah, Team Willow.
This is once again from Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Huge Buffy the Vampire Slayer fan. Have seen the series maybe 3 times. Revisited every few years, and I feel
that series is holding up quite nicely.
It does. It ages really well. Yeah. I mean, if you watch it again with the racial lens,
Everything holds up
exactly, but.
But, you know, all things considered, you're like, hey, this is...
Still stands. Yeah, for sure. Olivia Pope made the list.
Yes.
If it wasn't Olivia Pope, I was going to say Annalise Keating should have made the list. But I would definitely choose Olivia Pope over Annalise Keating.
All right. So we're going to have to pause here. I was very happy to see Carmela Soprano at the top of the list. It wasn't where I thought the list was going, because you read it in Slate in reverse order. But there is a wonderful moment in The Sopranos where Carmela has decided she's going to leave Tony, or she thinks she might, and she goes to see this psychiatrist who I remember as a kind of older Jewish man. And at a certain point, he says, well, you have to leave right. When he understands what's being talked about, he says, well, you have to leave right now, and you can't take anything with you because it's all blood money. It's all contaminated. It's all, you know, it's all gain from the suffering and dying and pain of other people. See, but Carmela gets this look on her face like, you have got to be kidding me. I'm not doing that. And it's such a wonderful moment about sort of, you know, when you know how badly you've sold out. All right. So we have to take a break with this great panel. We'll be back. All right, we're back. We're back with The Nose. We're in New Haven with Lucy Gelman, editor of the arts paper and host of WNHH Radio's Kitchen Sink, Mercy Quay, founder and principal consultant for The Narrative Project, and a columnist, as am I, for the Hearst Connecticut Media Group. Remember, if my column offends you, it means Mercy probably wrote it. You should get in touch with her. and Brian Slattery is... I see this because you got complaints about one of my columns.
Yeah, he wrote something and my email was flooded. My inbox was flooded.
How dare you?
That's great.
Colin couldn't have possibly written this.
Brian Slattery is arts editor for the New Haven Independent and a producer at WNHH Radio. So we kind of, I don't know if we ever publicly did this, but we kind of here at The News had decided we were kind of going to be off comic book movies for a while. But there are going to be exceptions. I mean, Into the Spider-Verse is such an amazingly visionary take on comic books that we would have done superheroes, we would have done that superhero story no matter what. So what about a superhero series about superheroes who are really, really terrible people, just the worst people imaginable. And what if its auteur was a person, a creator, who really hates superheroes, thinks they're stupid, moronic, these are his words, and basically bad for us? That is pretty much the premise, at least the initial premise, of The Boys, the story of a corporatized superhero world. And we'll hear a little bit. It's on Amazon right now. We'll hear a little clip from it before we get going. You're you're going to hear one of the very, very few sympathetic characters in this series, Annie January, otherwise known as Starlight, and she's being briefed by some of her handlers from this thing called the Vought Corporation, which seems to own all the superheroes.
This is Trevor from Crime Analytics. So, we have exciting news for you. We are sending you on your first patrol.
To team up tomorrow night.
Oh, that's great. That's great news. Thank you.
Hi, big fan.
There you go. A crime itinerary?
Yep, where and when to find the bad guys. That's what my department does. We vet leads, crunch satellite data, comp stat. Better intel than the police.
Mm. You know, thanks, but I'm good. I like to do my own investigating.
And that is why we love you.
But it's not coming from us. It's corporate. To protect you. What if you nab the wrong person? There's liability to consider.
The deep is coming?
Yeah, it's a water-adjacent crime.
Then he should do it himself. He doesn't need me.
It was going to be deep and translucent, but everyone on 82 is so excited to get you out there.
Yeah, it's just, you know, back in Des Moines, I always patrolled alone.
And that is why we love you. But we see at least a 23% uptick in social media mentions and hero hashtags when there's a team up. People love a team up.
Love a team up.
So we should say the 82 is the 82nd floor where the really horrible and powerful suits are who really run this stuff. The Deep is sort of a fusion of Aquaman and Harvey Weinstein. He's this sexual predator Aquaman kind of guy being paired up with Starlight, whom he has already harassed, and more than harassed, actually, on her first day at work. So, Brian, you're going to be the Virgil who leads us through the underworld of the boys because you understand everything about where it came from. But I don't know. Get us started in any way you want.
I never thought that all my comic book reading would come in handy the way that it has. So The Boys is a product of this guy named Garth Ennis, who for a few decades now has made a career on this kind of interesting combination of storylines that are hyper-violence, also sort of shot through with this real sort of absurdist, you know, sharp absurdist humor, and this kind of oddly centered moral compass, considering how dark things get. Like, it's not nihilistic. You know, there's sort of a there. There's a sense of right and wrong going on, usually not really coming from any of the characters, but coming from somewhere. And so the Boys fits pretty neatly into what Garth Ennis does really well, which is that combination of things. He takes aim, as he has for quite a while, at sort of like any kind of like power structure. You know, the corporate world is I'm struggling not to swear. This is really hard. The corporate world is nonsense. The church is nonsense. God is nonsense. Religion is nonsense. All of those things. He's an avowed atheist who, you know, takes his shot at these things. So I feel like the show is often at its best when it's in that mode. The place where it starts to come up, the place where Garth Ennis comes up a little short for me is that I'm actually kind of fine with the whole let's burn everything down thing. Yeah, but I'm not, I kind of want the, and then we will build what? And I sort of like wait for that thing to come along. And it never quite does. But sort of like page for page and now scene for scene, there's this sort of, the writing is often sharp enough to carry you from page to page. So that's The Boys. When he takes aim at superheroes, it's particularly interesting because we live in this moment where superheroes have sucked a lot of the air out of popular culture. It's fun to see a show sort of skewering all of that. And it's fun to watch the show. For me, it was fun to watch the show as a metaphor for sort of the hegemony that Marvel has over the popular imagination and how healthy that all is, really. You know, what are we giving up when we're just watching superhero movie after superhero movie? And when that, speaking of like things that everybody really does seem to watch, it's the Marvel movies. And it is kind of weird to think that we've all sort of come along on this ride with a couple of very high-powered Marvel and now Disney executives telling us, you know, what we should be thinking and feeling all the time.
Yeah, I mean, one thing that was suggested, Lucy, in another podcast I was listening to, was that so Garth Ennis had actually launched these things as comic books back in like 2006 or something like that, and maybe even a kind of a critique of the Bush administration at that time. But there's a way in which their vision, as heavy-handed as it might have even seemed in 2006, is a little bit come of age. I mean, there's a way in which the incredible cynicism and almost sort of chaotic disregard for basic decency that characterizes this world seems oddly familiar.
It's refreshing in a way.
Oh my gosh, it's so So going into this, I did not think I would like it, just because of the warning at the beginning, which is like, viewers may see, and then it's like it's all the big ones, like like nudity, sexual violence, like physical violence, like everything. And I thought, I'm not gonna like this. I don't like blood. I don't like gore. I don't like sexual violence. And I actually liked it a great deal more than I thought I would. Partly because it's so funny. I mean, it's darkly funny. But like just the send-ups of characters that we know so well because we've become so fluent in this language of comics and sort of like comic book movies and comic heroes. Like the there's a pitch to the mayor of Baltimore for a character named Nubian Prince. And it's so funny. I mean, it's really, really a very funny.
We should say scene. Part of the premise here is that this corporation, which controls all these heroes, will actually lease them for huge amounts of money to cities that have crime problems.
Anyway, right, which is something like $300 million, right? So something just really ridiculous and exorbitant. And it's really funny. In another scene, we see that one of the seven, so the seven iconic comic, like comic book character, superheroes. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mercy. is named Black Noir, which is just Black Black.
Yeah.
And so it's like, this is funny. It was a little too gritty for me at times. I actually, there's a scene where someone's head explodes and brains go everywhere. And I got a little sick to my stomach, but, I actually found this very funny and ridiculous and delightful.
Mercy?
No lead-in, just...
I can do a lead-in, which is my sense, just please watching respond. The emails come through, was that maybe you were the... Let me even say even more of a lead-in, which is when we first started thinking about doing this show, I had watched about 4.5 episodes, and I decided to stop. That I thought that I kind of got it, and I didn't really need to keep going, and I didn't like anybody on the series enough to really sort of decide that I wanted to stay there and root for them, which may get back to Brian's point about what you're trying to build. I've kind of revised my thinking since then, but I was sensing that you had hit a similar kind of wall.
Yeah, I think that's real. I think that I like this show, and I have since Tuesday, which is when I think we kind of decided that we were going to talk about it, I've also recommended it to people, although I will say that I think we were talking earlier about social responsibility. I think this is absent that altogether, and because of that, I can't trust how people will receive it, and that makes me uncomfortable with it, right? I mean, if we have been coming out of, if we're fresh off, we're currently still in a culture of political correctness where people avoid things for the sake of avoiding them, and we haven't talked about, violent or problematic Black tropes, it seems really irresponsible to me to put them in satirically and expect everyone to get it. Right. And I think that we can sit around the table and find the jokes in it. And I think a group just like this will find it really funny. But I don't think that it'll be received that way by loads of people. And that makes me really uncomfortable.
Yeah, I guess you're saying something a little bit different than that. One of the things that I struggled with here a little bit is that the part of the plot is that there's kind of an insurgent group that has seen through the facade, the veneer of these wonderful superheroes, seen them for the coarse and callous and destructive and sometimes even life-taking villains that they really kind of are, and wants to do something about it. One of the difficulties with that group is that most of its members are unappealing, and most of their methods are questionable. And that's like, Lucy, that's one of the things I was sort of struggling with, is like, how, I mean, there's a young man named Huey who
Huey's probably the most likable character.
Right. And in the first, pretty much, this won't be a spoiler, but pretty much the first scene of the movie, well, something really horrible happens to Huey. I won't spoil it, but something horrible happens to him, and he's sort of trying to figure out what to do, how to get justice out of that. But very quickly, I feel like he's being corrupted too, as he searches for justice.
Yeah, I mean, you've got these archetypes, and I think that for me, I found comedy in it because I thought it was just so clearly playing off this whole narrative structure that, like, we've gotten to a point where superhero movies are very much plug and play, and yep. And people like that. People like that a great deal, as we've learned from box office returns. But because of that, you know, like, your bad characters are even in the fight that. Even in the fight for justice that they're seeing, like, they're kind of slimy and yucky, and we don't really like them a lot. So yeah, I mean, it was something that I also fully expect. Like, going into it, I was not surprised by the show. Yeah, I mean, I think it just reflects this comic book or superhero narrative and kind of turns it a little bit on its head. And it's very cynical.
You know, now that I'm... hear that and hear everything that's been said here, Brian. I can't remember whether you said this at the beginning. So Garth Ennis, the guy who created all this stuff, grew up in Northern Ireland, where in fact both sides were, generally speaking, pretty compromised.
Yes.
Where right. you could pick a favorite, but you couldn't pick a favorite that had completely clean hands ever. You know, and right. I think about my own reaction, particularly to this insurgent group that seems to be doing the work of justice, but in a way that I find distasteful at times. Maybe he is informed by that.
Hello, Sinn Féin. Yeah. Yeah. No, totally. The thing for me is that, again, as a super comic book nerd, I always think about how the graphic novel Watchmen is still a couple steps ahead of us. Yep. This thing written in 1986 into 1987 that... I feel like even these very like self-conscious superhero things that we're seeing now are still playing in a small corner of the worlds that the two creators of that, Alan Moore and Dave Gibbons, made. Like the Boys is basically like two of the subplots of Watchmen, and then there's like six in that book. I'm still kind of waiting. I mean, as long as comic books have become mainstream, I'm kind of waiting for the stuff I really like about comic books to become mainstream.
Which is?
That'll be fun. There's a way the comic books go off the rails a lot that other media are not good at yet. And I think in those moments are the times when comic books can be the most revelatory. You know, there's this point where the plot just like, it's very hard to describe because it really kind of works in comic books and it's hard to describe in words. But it's... They can be revelatory in ways that so far seem unique to the medium, and it'd be really cool to see someone try to do it. Sorry to Bother You gets really close. The movie that's last summer now.
Mm-hmm.
A History of Violence, that movie gets really close. Even like Pan's Labyrinth gets pretty close. These are all people who are of course like huge comic book fans. But
all right, I'm getting information in my headphones that we should probably break, so we'll have time to stretch out and luxuriously endorse things. So let's do that. The series is called The Boys. Did anybody else have anything else? Did you have a final point you wanted to make?
I'm going to finish The Boys, and I would actually recommend everyone watch it.
I am going to
not canceling it.
Yeah, one of the things we had debated about maybe talking about is that we now live in a world where you can just kind of wander away from some series that you're watching because there's so many other things that you could watch anyway, even if you're not mad at it. You could just get distracted, and that had happened to me with The Boys. But I'm with you, Mercy. I'm going to finish this thing now. All right, let's take a break, and we'll be back.
Uniform when you're a boy. Other boys check you out. You get a girl. You said your favorite things when you're a boy.
All right, we are back. We're in the Gateway studios of WNPR down in New Haven. Jonathan McNichol is the producer today. I don't know who else to thank. Gene Amatruda? Somebody up there is making sure that the show actually gets on the air. At least I hope so. So if you could hear this show, probably Gene Amatruda needs to be thanked. We'll be back on Monday with our usual scramble. And so we're going to make some endorsements and make some recommendations now. Lucy, why don't you get us started?
Yeah, I have two. So one local recommendation and one not local recommendation or endorsement. So the first is on Monday I was covering this show and there was an artist who performed who's also a member of the band Fat Astronaut, which is based
oh, I like
in,
them.
One of my
yeah,
favorite bands.
They're really, really wonderful.
Shout out to Chad Springer.
Yes, if you're listening on Friday, they're playing at the State House in New Haven tonight, but that is not my endorsement. So her name is Ro Godwin and she has a relatively new EP called The Ro Godwin Experience. Volume one, and it's just three tracks, and they are so beautiful. At least one of them, but probably all three, may make you cry. There's one that I can't listen to without crying, but they're really beautiful. They're heartfelt. She's a really smart lyricist, and she's very talented. And I love her voice, so I highly recommend that. And then, Colin, you've recommended this on your show before, but I just listened to the entire first and second season of In the Dark, and I highly, highly recommend it. Madeline Barron is my hero. She's just an incredible journalist and does really, really good work. So I can't recommend that podcast. Both seasons one and two, but season one is about a child abduction. So if you're a parent, probably don't listen.
Also, season two, I think, is the more compelling of the two.
They're
both good.
Yeah. Yeah. Season two is amazing.
All right. So, Brian, why don't you go next?
On the local music front, there's a I'm pretty sure I've done him before, but this guy named Chesky, who has spent the year now. He's going to come out with three albums this year. He has two of them out, and they're both great. And the third one is coming out whenever it comes out near the end of the year. That's C-E-S-C-H-I, Chesky. And then the other ones.
So like, how do you find his albums?
If you Google him, there's a website. He obviously has a website. Stuff on Bandcamp, iTunes,
okay,
et cetera, et cetera. Since I just talked about how revelatory comic books are, go read Watchmen if you haven't read it yet, or reread it. And then the other one that feels that way to me is this one called Black Hole by Charles Burns, which is one of my favorite books ever. So there we go.
All right. So before we go to Mercy, I have to say that I, because of sort of timing, I have a social engagement here in New Haven at 7, and it doesn't really make sense to go back. So I have 5 hours to kill in New Haven. I might go get Watchmen at, you know, some independent store and have that be one of the ways that I also need a haircut, though. So there's a lot of ways I could go here. Mercy.
I have a list of space recommendations, as always, but I'm going to switch it up. Let me start with Another Life, I think. So Another Life is a show that you can binge watch on Netflix today. It is about a manned mission to save the planet after a alien artifact is sent to Earth and no one can figure out what's going on. Turns out it's an antenna and they send humans to where the signal is coming from to figure out if these are friendly aliens or not. It is really what happens when seven strangers embark on a trip, right? It's basically real world Road Rules Challenge in space. So if you like those kinds of things, check it out. I think it's awful, but it's also worth the watch. I like a little science. I like a little fiction in my science, not a little science in my fiction. That's the only thing there. There is a book called Scarcity that I just learned about based off of a recent episode of Hidden Brain. It is what happens when an economist and a psychologist team up to tell you what happens to your brain when you don't have enough of a particular thing, whether that's money, time, friends, what have you. Check it out. You can find it on Audible.
All right. So one book from this summer that I am going to recommend is The Lady in the Lake by Laura Lippman. It is a here's the sort of horribly unfair way of talking about it. It's as if a woman made The Wire. And the reason that's a horribly unfair way of talking about it is that Laura Lippman is actually married to David Simon, and it's pretty clear what they talk about around the house. They talk about urban problems and crime and journalism and politics and how all of those things intersect and feed off one another. But it's a very interesting style of narration. It's sort of a lot of different POVs, including the protagonist and including the murdered person and lots of other people as well. So you hear, it's all said also in 1966, I think she does a pretty good job of nailing down that period. So again, it is called The Lady in the Lake. And then I had like this really kind of momentary positive affirmation of myself moment, because I knew about a song that Mercy didn't know about. and it's the kind of song that Mercy would like and does like. And it is a completely offensive song. I want to get that out right here.
But we're also not canceling it.
We're not canceling it. Don't email me about how much your sensibilities.
Too funny to cancel.
And don't email me when you can't reach Colin.
Right. It's called Jesus is the One, parentheses, I Got Depression. It's by Zach Fox and Kenny Beats. It pretty much manages, it's sort of like, you know, Matt Groening used to be asked, apropos of the Life is Hell series, or Life in Hell series, who the two Zach and Akbar, Jeff and Akbar, that's what their names were. And people would ask him, you know, are they Muslims? They wear fezes. Are they gay? Are they brothers? Are they siblings or whatever? And he used to say, whichever possibility offends you the most. and that pretty much, I think, applies to this song, Jesus is the One. It's very sacrilegious and everything else. And then if you want to hear another thing that's kind of offensive and funny, all of my current hip-sounding pretense is because Sam Hadelman, occasionally a guest on The Nose, sent me a 66-song playlist.
Oh.
So, like, I'm very, you know, I'm very...
If you are not a recipient of one of Sam Hadelman's playlists, right. I assure you, you are out of touch
right.
with society.
You need them. So, I think Doves in the Wind with SZA and Kendrick Lamar is also kind of funny, again, in that somewhat offensive way that we like about this other song. So, that's all I have to say, except that thank you to these wonderful guests here, Lucy Gelman, editor of the Arts Paper, host of WNHH Radio's Kitchen Sink, SYNC, Mercy Quay, founder and principal consultant for the Narrative Project, columnist for Hearst Connecticut Media Group, Brian Slattery, arts editor for the New Haven Independent, a producer at WNHH Radio, a novelist and other kinds of authors and musician and members of bands and things like that. So thanks to all of you for taking time out to listen to us chatter away. Yeah, 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 yeah.